It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Well, thanks to a caller request, Mary in Door County wishes we could infuse the airwaves with more poetry through the seasons. So we've enlisted a pair of Wisconsin poets to reflect on complexities of this form of writing and to share their poetry. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can add comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. R.B. Simon is a Madison author and poet. Most recent book is called Not Just the Fire. R.B., welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. And Antonio Vargas Nieto is here, writer and artist working in poetry, films, and photography, and assistant programming director at the arts organization Woodland Pattern in Milwaukee. Antonio, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good morning. And Antonio, let's start with you. What sets poetry apart from other forms of creative expression, creative writing?
I like to think that poetry is versatile and malleable enough that anyone can shape it to whatever they need in the moment.
Okay. So when you think about that versatility, why? Why is poetry so versatile?
Well, I think it's because it's probably the most sustained art form we've had for the longest time. I think it's because no matter like what anyone's like skill level is, we're always thinking and probably writing something down in some way. And I think poetry is just a really good way to organize your thoughts.
R.B., how does poetry give you sustenance?
Oh, there's so many ways. It would be hard to list them all. I started writing poetry very young. It was just a way for me to journal in my teenage angst. But in the last few years, as I've taken it more seriously, it's really been cathartic for me, in that it's let me incorporate new pieces of my life, explore parts of my identity, explore everything from politics to religion to my relationship with nature.
How is it a release form when you write about identity? How does your identity influence the poetry that comes out of you?
My identity is really integral to my poetry. I very much tend to be a poet who writes first-person poetry, although I don't always. But I like to make my poetry very accessible. So my narrator is almost always I. Mm-hmm. That does not mean every poem I write is autobiographical. It just means that I want somebody to step into that place of being in the poem. And I think that allows me to communicate pieces of my identity that maybe people don't understand. And allows them to have a little taste of identities that may be different from their own.
Antonio, how do you approach your poetry, whether it's first person or pieces of you coming through in the poem? How do you think that through? What is your process?
Well, I think kind of RB hit on it a little bit when she mentioned that the I that she may be writing is not necessarily her, or whether she wants to explore political ideas or religious ideas or personal ideas. Poetry, sort of like the various forms, the various subgenres, the various like reasons for writing poetry, sort of inform the direction that they take.
You know, sometimes when I read a poem, I think I know what's going on in the poem, but then, you know, there's a different interpretation somewhere else, whether it's someone else who's reading it or it's something, you know, I'm reading about the poem. You know, in terms of how we should interpret poetry, Antonio, what do you tell your students? Is there a single path, or can we look at poems, you know, quite differently from one another?
I think that is part of the beauty of poetry, is that everyone can have their individual impression of it. And then, you know, whether you're the poet writing it or the listener hearing it, you have the opportunity to either place your own experiences, contrast your experiences. It can recall memories. It can just has such a good way to help you wrap your head around something. And then another really good thing that I told my students is to discuss their poems with each other, because like I was saying, a lot of times your own intention may be clear as day to you on the page, but someone may have a completely different interpretation, and that I think is exciting and interesting and creates opportunities for dialogue.
We're talking with Milwaukee-based writer and artist Antonio Vargas Nieto and Madison writer R.B. Simon about poetry and process and this form of expression. You can call in with questions and comments along the way at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. R.B., you have said that you're on a hunt for specificity of language when writing. What do you mean by that?
So I'm a little bit of a geek when it comes to words, etymology, the sort of exact meaning of a word. Mm-hmm. And so I will agonize over a single word choice for, you know, almost the same amount as it took me to write the rest of the poem, because there's a very specific image I'm trying to create. And there's a lot of words in the English language. So which ones you choose paint very different pictures.
And which ones you don't know about.
There's a gray stone in my way.
And there are words out there maybe you haven't come by yet. And that too probably causes you a little bit of, you know, angst about the right word choice.
I love exploring new words. The thesaurus is my best friend.
I wonder, Antonio, how do you stop yourself from revising? Because you get the feedback and then more feedback. When do you know a poem is finished?
Honestly, that's something I struggle with so much. But I don't think there's a perfect answer. I think recently what I have found helps me is reading a variety of poetry, whether it's the voices, the era it's from, the reason it was written, just to expose myself to other like ways of writing, other themes of writing, and also like how I receive the poetry. Like, am I looking for sort of like a melodic feel to the poem? Am I looking for just like hard images in front of me? Am I looking back into the past? Am I like speculating? Like all of these things sort of inform a revision. Like I said, I find myself sort of sometimes unable to tell when something is done. But there's also this kind of like longstanding notion within poetry that like you should write a poem and then put it away, not think about it for weeks at a time, and then revisit it to like see if your original intention is still there, if you're seeing something new, or if you maybe are ready to revise or just like move on or cut it up and put it into another poem. All sorts of possibilities in the revision process, which is both exciting and a little bit, you can get lost in it.
RB, do you use that technique where you put something away and then revisit it maybe months, perhaps years later?
I do. I don't necessarily wait. I have some poems that are probably years old and unfinished, but if I'm really excited about a poem, I'll come back to it within a week or two. There is definitely something to be said for letting a poem breathe. You're too close to it when you first write it and you're very excited about it. Give it a little room, come back and go, oh, that word choice, it doesn't really work with the rest of the poem. And you can see that much more clearly.
We have Wisconsin poets R.B. Simon and Antonio Vargas Nieto, and you can join the discussion along the way. Call in with a question. You can share your poetry perspective. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore sources of inspiration for writing poetry with a pair of Wisconsin writers and artists. Arby Simon in Madison is here and Antonio Vargas Nieto in Milwaukee. Do you find ideas from daily life that prompt you to write a poem? Call in and share. You can ask a question to the poets. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We recently heard from Mary in Door County requesting more discussion about poetry. And here's Mary talking about programs she's heard in the past.
They would host a program where you would talk about the change of the season, and maybe the poet would read something that they've written, but then you'd invite the audience to submit a favorite poem of theirs.
Arby, you have some poems about winter. Can you tell us about them?
I do. I tend to incorporate a lot of nature imagery in my poetry because it's one of the identities that I explore, my relationship to the natural world. I have, in my very first chapbook that came out a couple of years ago called The Good Truth, I had a poem written just about the experience of walking in fresh snow. I have a poem in my second book that is a memory of my mother in winter. She passed away in 2014, but the backdrop is the winter months. So I tend to incorporate those things a lot.
I wonder, when you're holed up inside in winter, especially on really cold days, do you find yourself wanting to write more?
Oh, yeah. Any gray day, any wintry day, any cold day, I just want to be in my recliner with my laptop.
Antonio, what about you? How does winter influence your writing process?
I find winter to be my best revision time because I can't be outside or doing things that I normally can do in warmer weather. So it's nice to revisit notes that I maybe accumulated over summer or haven't had the chance to like sift through or revise or put together. So that's sort of my relationship to winter, where it's my time to reflect and look forward to warmer weather. But also there's something to be said about the sort of, you know, stillness that winter can impart when sort of the outside world comes to a bit of a standstill because whether it's too cold or there's too much snow. And it's nice to just like remember that, you know, there's this bigger thing than us that kind of dictates our lives a little bit.
I wonder how do you get through writer's block? When I'm thinking about winter, you're a little bit more limited. You can't just run out or maybe spend a lot of time outside in nature. But how do you handle writer's block? And Antonio, you first.
I think that in many ways, I don't know, maybe this is like a bit of a hot take, but writer's block is like oftentimes self-imposed. It may not be like fun to think of it that way. And I feel like sometimes it's easier to just fall on that, like, oh, I have writer's block, so I can't write anything good. I think that's kind of like probably us succumbing to the pressures of ourselves and what people place on poetry. Huh. So I think it's important to just like write through it, I guess, is my strategy, is even if I don't feel like it, even if I feel like what I'm producing is not worthwhile, it's better to get the bad poems out than like wade in them or like sit in them or wait for them to suddenly be good. Sometimes it's good to just like write and be and look at it and say, you know what, this is not great and that's okay, and I move on to the next poem.
I like that. Arby, how about you? When the words don't flow, what happens to you? What do you do?
I think that's great advice. I'm a big proponent of radical self-care. So I realize when I'm facing a period of like less productivity in terms of writing, and I'll concentrate on editing. I'll concentrate on submitting to magazines I'd like to be published in. And I'll just give myself a break from writing for a little bit and then come back at it with, as soon as I find an idea I'm excited about, because it's really the excitement that keeps me writing. And there's never any lack of things to be excited about to write a poem about in my world. But sometimes there's just space between when you come across those ideas.
In terms of the radical self-care, do you find that, do you ever feel a bit guilty, or do you push yourself? Do you accept that you need that time and that space if things aren't coming just right?
Yeah, I have struggled with feeling guilty with it in the past. You know, some of the poets I admire the most in contemporary poetry are just like pumping out books left and right, and it's hard not to fall into the imposter syndrome trap. But I write at my pace, and I actually was feeling a little frustrated about writer's block recently, and I decided to do two things. I went to a writing residency, and I told myself I wasn't going to submit poetry for a while. And so I'm not focusing on this sort of PoBiz machine of like write, send out, get published. And it really came back down to when I felt inspired.
We are talking about poetry with Madison writer R.B. Simon with us and Milwaukee-based writer and artist Antonio Vargas Nieto. You can join in questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Antonio, you teach beginning writing workshops. What are some common apprehensions that students express about writing poetry?
Well, it depends on the age range. Honestly, a lot of the elementary school students that I work with are engaging with poetry for the first time outside of, kind of like sing-songy rhymes. And when I present them with something that doesn't rhyme, they're just look at me and they're like, this isn't poetry, this doesn't rhyme. A lot of times they think that they have to rhyme, so they will force it. And then, it's like, it depends on the intention, definitely, because, with elementary school students, it's just to get them engaged in expressing creatively what's on their mind. And that's my goal. And I think poetry is a good way to do that. With some of the high school or middle school students that I've taught, they feel like they need to like gut all of their deepest feelings and like put them on the page in order for it to be like considered, like, I'm doing air quotes, good poetry, which it doesn't have to be the case either. So a lot of times people's notion of poetry needs to be exploring the most vulnerable moment in your life publicly is what causes people to like shy away from writing their own poetry. So I'm always trying to engage students with like to explore different voices, to maybe like if they are a fan of, like, especially with the elementary school students, if they're a fan like of an anime or comic book, I just say write yourself into this, or write this character out of it, or like what would happen in this scenario with these characters. And it's just to get them thinking of things that aren't maybe so personal.
Okay. And RB, you're a substance use counselor with a focus on using creativity for wellness and recovery. How is poetry an outlet for recovery?
Well, I have found it to be an outlet in my own recovery. That was what first made me want to pursue becoming a substance use counselor. I really believe that there are some things that are difficult to heal from without really expressing them in more than one way. And so it's easy enough, I shouldn't say easy, but it's easy enough to sit to talk to a therapist and say, this happened and this happened. But to describe it, to sort of sit with it, to think of the right adjectives or colors or how you want to represent that in your life on a piece of paper or a painting really makes you look at it very differently and allows a new kind of processing of whatever you're coping with. So, huge fan of poetry therapy. I have a friend studying to be a poetry therapy practitioner, and I think that's a wave of the future, and I use both art and creative writing in my work.
Arby Simon and Antonio Vargas Nieto, they are Wisconsin-based artists and poets sharing their inspiration with words. Be part of this conversation. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hundreds of poets, musicians, and performance artists, they recently converged for a poetry marathon to benefit Woodland Pattern, the Milwaukee nonprofit for poetry and the arts. The organization is also a catalyst for the Milwaukee Youth Poet Laureate Program. It's a competitive process. You submit poems and a resume, read a poem in front of a judging panel in the finals. We caught up with the city's inaugural Youth Poet Laureate, that is Emily Igwike, whose tenure runs through the end of the year. She explains to WPR's Mackenzie Crummy why she applied to this program.
Well, I think the main thing that kind of attracted me to the program was not only the opportunity to integrate myself into the greater community of poets and artists within Milwaukee and get that opportunity to meet people in that space and also grow as a poet in that space, but also the emphasis that this program had on like civic leadership and community service.
And you consider poetry a way for people to look inward, from my understanding, and to create a sense of self. So can you tell us, what are you discovering about yourself when creating poetry?
With writing poetry, I think that I realized it's an excellent way to kind of encapsulate the moments that for me were very revealing about myself and my character, and also things I've begun to value more as I've grown up. For example, I feel like I've had more opportunities to just really enjoy times and spaces of silence and isolation. And although it sometimes seems daunting and overwhelming at first, but looking back on it, I feel like these moments of like quiet and like solitude were excellent ways for me to reflect on where I've come and how far I've come and progressed, but also maybe where I want to be and where I want to grow and where I want to continue to go.
So thinking of that writing process, I understand that you often based your poems on memories or events in your life, but at the same time, it can be kind of spontaneous. So can you give an example of a life event that may have triggered a poem for you?
Yes. So one of my favorite memories I've ever written a poem about was probably when I was able to share a meal with my mom. And in this memory, we're just simply sharing one of my favorite Nigerian dishes, which is ofe egusi, and the side of pounded yam. And we're just talking and we're just sharing this meal together. And in this memory, it was just kind of one of the best ways I could ever characterize like my mom's like endearing love for me. And then also just this warm, just homely conversation that we had over a plate of my favorite food. And this memory in particular just always reminds me of just like the power of just simply sharing a meal with someone that I love.
For students considering poetry as an outlet in their lives, how would you advise them to start?
I think to start writing poetry is to first get over this fear of the blank page and know that poetry doesn't have to look a certain way or sound a certain way to necessarily be good. I feel like once you approach poetry genuinely and sincerely and just know or use it as a place to put down your deepest thoughts or put down your deepest emotions, that it will be able to guide you itself, and that any first draft is simply that first draft. So no poem always comes out perfect when you first write it down, but if you're looking to poetry as an outlet, you should never be afraid to start, or never be afraid of the blank page, or be afraid, oh, what, this sounds bad, because your personal emotions and your deepest sentiments about anything in your life are genuine, and they deserve to be maybe honored or commemorated within a poem or just a place for you to have that safe space. I think anyone should have access to a safe space in their life, whether it is through writing, whether it is a physical space. So being just getting that courage to get over the intimidation of that blank page or that blank screen and just start writing is honestly the first way to start. And then knowing that as long as you're being genuine and as long as you're approaching it sincerely, that it's going to guide itself and it's going to be a beautiful poem if you just approach it that way.
That validation is so helpful. You have a poem to read for us.
Yes, this poem is titled Untitled. A few months ago, my youth spilled onto scuffed linoleum floors and I began tasting citrus. Sweet curiosity rotted too quickly and my thoughts blossomed, whispering that time passing is so sour. Or maybe a loosely wrapped gift, opened once, then discarded. Temporary joy trapped between flimsy calendars. Or maybe just the seconds flowing out of you into the sky and its pinpricks of patient stars. Last night, I remembered their bursts of radiant light are simply empty projections, flickering with what used to be full of life. Thank you.
That is Emily Igweke, Milwaukee's first youth poet laureate. She spoke with WPR's Mackenzie Crummy about the program and her experience writing poetry. Now we're back in conversation with a pair of Wisconsin-based poets, R.B. Simon in Madison, Antonio Vargas Nieto in Milwaukee. Antonio, you're a mentor to Emily Igweke through the Youth Poet Laureate program. What is the importance of a formal program for students in the city?
I think the main purpose it serves is to show students that there is reason to write poetry. There is an audience for poetry. There's a need for poetry. And they have an opportunity to express themselves in a way that elevates them, you know, beyond maybe just their journal or their friend circle or their classroom. It can take them, I mean, through the National Youth Poet Laureate Program, as a potential to elevate them to a national stage, which is a lofty goal, but not the main goal, I would say. The main goal is to show students that writing poetry is important and we want to hear more of it.
RB, what comes up for you as you heard Emily's poem?
First of all, it's a lovely poem, and it's always wonderful to hear youth writing such exquisite work. I work as a reader for the Harbor Review. I'm a senior poetry editor there, and we've gotten in some very young poets, and it's always very exciting to see sort of the next generation of poets start emerging. You know, there's rumors that poetry is dead, and we're trying very hard to prove that it is a vital and thriving and important part of our literary tradition. So it's very exciting for me.
What do you think Wisconsin could do better to support poet laureate programs and poets more generally?
You know, I think there's a lot of great offerings in Wisconsin for poetry. There's open mics everywhere. There's the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets. There's the Wisconsin Writing Association. You know, there's ways to get involved to whatever level you want. I think the biggest barrier really is that people don't want to consider themselves poets. And I think that when we allow ourselves to just start recording our truths on paper, and those can be truths about our own lives or just observations about the world, and we allow ourselves to call ourselves poets and to hone our craft, a lot more people are going to engage in poetry. I just think it's become sort of an elite thing, and I want to bring it back down to public level.
Let's take a call now. Eileen in Sirona. Eileen, hi.
Hi, how are you, Joy?
Good. Well, go ahead.
My question is to RV and Antonio. I have been gathering a collection, which I'm going to put into an anthology, of more than 100 poems that my father wrote while he was alive. He is now deceased, and in going through these poems, there are many of them that have words that are not written down, or there's just a blank there. Like, whoever typed this for him in the beginning didn't translate the word properly. It doesn't make sense. It's just totally missing. I'm a retired editor myself and writer, but I don't know how to handle this. Do I make a note in the beginning in the introduction and say some of the words are missing, or do I just completely delete the entire poem?
Or perhaps even, you know, fill in some missing words. Antonio, what thoughts come up for you?
I think that would be a really good way to explore sort of like found poetry in certain ways. I mean, I'm not, you know, going to tell you to take on the voice of your father, but maybe it could turn into a dialogue, or maybe, you know, you say you have an experience as an editor, maybe you can sort of coax out the intention of the poem and fill the word. I mean, that's where my mind is going.
Arby, how about you when there are missing words?
Yeah, I actually sort of love the potentiality of that situation, because you could do so many things with it. You certainly could fill in what you think is the best word and say, you know, I've done my best to complete this in the vein of my, you know, my father's wishes and intent. Or like Antonio said, you could really play with a dialogue with your father and explore, you know, those pieces that do have missing words. What would you put there? You could play even with format in terms of like, going back and forth between those dialogues of missing spaces and the original text. So there's a lot you could do with that. I wouldn't discard it. You've got some great material to work with. I would just be very clear, you know, when I've done blackout or exposure poetry and I've used other people's words, I've bracketed my own words or used some other mode of showing the dialogue.
Eileen, thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for that question. Susan now in St. Francis is with us. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. What a great discussion. I wanted to share, I was a artist in residence for years in Oklahoma with elementary children. And what I would tell them about writing is a couple things. One, it's not something to do. It's a place to go. And the other thing was that writing is like dance, and editing is like math. You don't ever try to do them at the same time. And so I say you write in the morning and you do math in the afternoon.
Oh, Arby, how does that sound to you?
That's very similar to something a poetry teacher of mine once said. She says there's bashers, and I'm trying to remember the name for the other person, but the bashers are kind of the people who bash out all the material and then go back and edit versus people who edit along the way. I've tried very hard in my own career to become more of a basher because I want to go back and fix the comma. And that does interrupt the flow of creativity. So I think if you can, bashing out that initial poem in a rough first draft is a great way to save some nuggets that you might already edit out if you aren't careful.
Antonio, what do you think of these nuggets that poetry is a place to go, not something you do?
I think that's really wonderful. I think that's a really good way to think about poetry, because oftentimes for me, it's an opportunity to reflect, to slow down, to instead of doing the 100 other things that are pulling for my attention, I think it's good to just sit down and make time for yourself and for poetry. And as far as like editing as you go, I'm so guilty of that in my years as a poet. What I find helps me is writing by hand. I'm a very visual thinker. So if I see all of my thoughts in front of me, that helps me organize them better. And I also find that I can track my drafts better if I'm handwriting them, because I'm like looking at the word, every word, every time I write it, as opposed to when I edit digitally, I lose track of previous drafts, so I can't really compare and contrast, or I'll just copy and paste over typos back and forth and like not really notice it. So that's something that I find that helps me is writing by hand. It also adds the like slowing down, adds to the slowing down aspect.
A pair of Wisconsin poets, Antonio Vargas Nieto and R.B. Simon, sharing their work, their inspiration, their tips for writing. You can join the conversation at any point. Email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Poetry, it offers fresh, surprising ways to hear language. We have a pair of Wisconsin poets explaining why poetry endures, and they help us see the world in new ways. You can join email ideas@wpr.org. Antonio Vargas Nieto is here, and R.B. Simon in Madison. Let's take another call now. Stefan in Racine. Stefan, hi.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can indeed.
Thank you. I'm a statewide poetry editor, and I've been involved in critiquing and doing workshops for about 40 years. One of the things that I find difficult to negotiate is the part of revision that gets newer poets to buy into the process. So someone will come to a group and say, well, I went to this open mic and I got lots of applause and they told me my poetry was great, so I don't want to make any changes. And I really believe that poetry needs poetics, and concrete language is better than, abstract language. So I'm kind of old school that way. Any thoughts on getting folks to buy into the need to revision, because I think we can make a great case that there are good poems and there are weak poems. And if you want to write a really good poem, then revision is a part of that process.
Stefan, thank you for that. Antonio, go ahead.
Well, I would say providing examples of where revisions could be done, and I guess like doing it in a gentle, suggestive way, or oftentimes asking about the intention of a word choice. When I'm working with high school students and I find that maybe I'm unclear on something, or the message doesn't have the impact that's intended, I'll just pose questions about their word choice, about maybe a word is repeated throughout, and I'll ask, is this like a rhythmic choice? Is this kind of an oversight? And I'll tell them, there's different times and places to use repetition. So if you use the same word multiple times, I feel that it loses impact because you're seeing the word, but maybe sometimes you want to like maybe diminish the power of a word, or you want to like lull the reader into thinking that they know what the word, and then you completely change how you use the word. So there's like a lot of ways to introduce revision in sort of like a creative, curious way, rather than, well, maybe think again, or like maybe think about your word. There's ways to propose revision in a way that feels a little bit more maybe enticing or exciting.
RB, what are your thoughts about the process and approach to feedback?
I absolutely love to get feedback. I'm one of those people that loves external validation. So I very much appreciate it when people are willing to read and give me constructive criticism on my work. I've had the pleasure of leading workshops and also participating in workshops for revising. And one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten is just to consider the world of the poem, again, by another poet who taught a class But asking line by line in a poem, how does this line serve the poem? And if it doesn't really, is it necessary? Or could I just add one word to the sentence above it or something like that? So I think efficiency in language is something else I aim for. Mm-hmm. And my poems aren't super long, but I like them to be concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
There, so that's where my vision process is. Yeah.
There goes that hunt for that one specific word that you're looking for.
Right.
Oh, well, Stefan, thank you so much for joining in. Kenneth now in Beloit. Kenneth, hi.
Hi. When I was first taught about poetry, I was told that it's about putting your feelings on paper. And I'd like to comment on the lady that found her father's poetry was blank words. Well, we've talked about how we struggle to find the word. And I think that was a form of art in that he left it for the reader to pick the word up. That
oh, Kenneth, thank you for that possibility. And we have less than a minute left. And I just want to leave it to you here. Antonio, what is your advice to poets who do want to publish their work?
I would say don't be afraid to self-publish. A lot of famous poets started by getting the work out there themselves. And don't be afraid to start small. You don't need to win the Pulitzer Prize or whatever with your first poetry collection.
And RB, your words of advice for the poet who wants to publish? Oh, RB, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I said something, but you can hear me.
I couldn't hear.
I would just say be bold enough to consider yourself a poet and embrace that identity and then just let yourself write.
Well, thank you both for joining us. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Antonio Vargas Nieto, Milwaukee writer and artist, also at Woodland Pattern in Milwaukee. RB Simon, poet, author, most recent book is called Not Just the Fire. And earlier, we heard from Milwaukee's inaugural Youth Poet Laureate, Emily Igwike. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.